welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 102nd episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots. Today's episode is going to be naan. Like, we're going to eat some naan. No, we ate too much this Thanksgiving. But EJ and I are talking about the top five non-Marvel or DC comic book films. I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. Joining me in the banter is my co-host, movie critic, EJ Marino.
I'm survived the tiger attack from last week. I'm back. I'm ready to do this podcast. Really excited for this topic. This was something we kind of threw out, and I kind of fell in love with the more I started researching. Really, really excited for this, and I'm still kind of full from Thanksgiving, even though I'm not a big fan of all the food I eat on Thanksgiving.
You're not a big fan of all the food you eat?
I don't know. Some of
but
it's
you
just
still,
like...
But you still eat it.
Well, like, I'm not a big, like... Witnessing, like, the whole, like, deconstruction of a turkey is, like, throwing me off. Like, I'm just seeing it, I'm like... why am I going to eat this later on? Like, just saw someone fist this. This is so gross. Like... I don't know, just not falling in love with it, but I did have.
Why are you sexualizing a turkey?
I'm not sexualizing it. I just gave it a sexual idea because that's what it reminded me of. It's just gross. Like, it's just something about Thanksgiving as much as it's a good holiday to eat, man. I'm just kind of glad it's over with. I'm ready for Christmas, actually. Like, never really said that before, but I'm excited for Christmas time this year.
It is interesting how we as humans consume food, if you think about it. My wife is always on the edge about being a vegan and or a vegetarian and stuff because she'll be like, oh, look at this chicken or look at this, like how we've just slaughtered a whole bunch of things. I'm like, well, I really like hamburgers and, I feel bad for the cow, but I still really like it a lot. But yeah, it's one of those things where we haven't really evolved very much in the butcher department as a society.
No, I think sometimes we get a little grosser, like the idea of a turducken. And I'm like, oh, man, like we devolved there. Like we didn't need to stuff turkey, chicken and a duck all together and then eat it. Like that's a crazy idea. So, yeah, as much as we've like kind of evolved in life, we've gotten grosser when it comes to food.
Is that Foul Centipede?
Oh, my God. Where is that movie? Like where was that spinoff was just the poultry version of the Human Centipede?
Oh, man. We're looking at these concepts to talk about, these subjects to talk about for our podcast, because we're getting into a kind of a little dead zone because everybody wants to stay away from Rogue One. So I came up with the idea of the top five non-Marvel or DC comic book films, but that kind of include, you're allowed to kind of put superheroes in there because they're not Marvel or DC. And I also let Vertigo sneak in there because... kind of not like DC, but it is DC. So the hardcore nerds might call me out for one of my picks because it's a Vertigo book that was transferred into a film. But we're not counting Vertigo as DC and Marvel.
I agree. There's a weird limit to this. This is kind of when we were talking about magic. We go into it with this like blanket subject and then we kind of break it down. And it's like, but what is like... a non-superhero comic book movie? Where does it fall? Is Spawn a comic book? Is Blade a comic? You know, who is a superhero? What is it? And, you know, even the different versions, because I even have like a manga on my list, you know, like an Asian comic book. And it's really interesting that how vast this genre is. And I'm really excited. And this kind of got sparked when we both got to see Officer Down. I think that was a really cool graphic novel inspired movie. And I think that kind of kicked off this awesome list that we get to create.
Yeah, we should probably talk about Officer Down. We should give it a good solid 5 minutes because I know that you really enjoyed the film. This is more of your cup of tea than my cup of tea.
100% my cup of tea. Like these are just there's little things that I was like, yep. It starts off with like an orgasm counter. Like it's just so over the top and so stylized. I decide like if if the movie Speed and Crank mixed together are like just like Dread, I don't know. There's just so much to it, and it's craziness, and it's so fun. But I'm going to take it you didn't really like it as much.
I liked it for what it was. I need to drink more before I watch these type of films, or I need to be in a big crowd to have like reaction, because I feed off of that kind of stuff when I'm watching a film. I saw Bad Santa 2 last week, and the movie isn't that good, but like when everybody's laughing at a joke that's just insane, it's contagious. And the same thing where like when eyes come popping out at the end and you're like, ooh, but if you're the only person like looking at it saying, ooh, it doesn't have the same effect of being in a whole theater. That's why I love Piranha 3D. I think that's one of the better movie experiences I ever had, because everybody's screaming through the whole entire movie.
Yeah, it's so funny because I noticed this on another person's review. I was looking into Officer Down before I watched and kind of seeing a general reaction. And someone literally said, if I wasn't watching this like crunched over my laptop on a screener while reviewing it, I would have had a better experience. And I definitely agree that this is something that really should have been shown in the theater, because the crowd would have went wild for certain scenes. It is a perfect like a party movie, you know, to throw on with a bunch of friends and just laugh at. It's great and it's good for that, but it did get to kind of taken away to see all this graphic stuff, and you can't like look over at somebody and be like, bro, did you just see that shit? Like, that's what it was missing. And that's something I will agree with you on, is this is definitely an experience kind of a movie, or something you should really be drunk for, because both of those would really, really help.
I think that's a perfect recommendation. Officer Down should be watched with a friend.
Yeah.
Minimum two people to make it a good viewing experience.
Yeah, just have a couple drinks, just laugh at it. It's like, these are the kind of movies that like Mystery Science Theater was made for. You're just supposed to talk over. You're supposed to just laugh at, kind of laugh along with. It's perfect. And that's what I appreciated about it, because I saw that quality in it. And it's so anti-mainstream. And I still like that these kind of movies are still getting promoted every now and then. Something slips through the crack that I'm like, who let this happen? Like, who checked off on this? Thank you. Like, it gives me hope as like an obscure filmmaker that I still have a chance somewhere to make something just ridiculous and out there. So that's what I always appreciate about Officer Down. But you just said it perfectly. Watch it with a group of friends. Have fun. I think that's what would help this more.
It definitely became a cult classic in like the first 5 minutes of the film. Like it just hits it right away with how the whole entire film sets up. But then I'm also left with a whole bunch of like, what the fuck moments? Like, what was going on with the animal people?
Were they animal people? Were they in masks? Yeah, there was a lot of questions, and I'm not mad at it for actually, because it gave me more, it left me with more than I thought it would have left me with. I was just like, simple movie. Like, I saw the first Crank movie with Jason Statham. Oh, fun, but it's one and over with. But this, I'm like, I don't want to admit that, but I kind of want a sequel. Like, I want to know what else the hell is going on here. So that's what I liked about it. But yeah, there was a lot that I'm like, you didn't answer a damn thing.
One thing that totally threw me off with this movie was the big evil head honcho in the film. He had subtitles, and then he like looks at the camera, pulls a Deadpool, and he's like, no, we're just going to dub this shit. And then it goes dubbed like old school kung fu film for the rest of the film for me. And I was just like, what the F is going on?
As soon as that happened, that's kind of when you were like, oh, it hit cult classic status early. Dude, as soon as he was like, fuck these subtitles, knocked them out of the way, and they just like fell out of frame, I was like, oh, they're doing it. Like, they are making just whatever they want to make. And I think that's what I liked about it, is it knew what it was doing. It made the exact movie. It wasn't trying to do anything other than be what it was. And I respect that. But yeah, he was a character that like, I was like, man, this dubbing thing's getting kind of annoying, because no one else was dubbed. It was just one character. It was so genius, like stuff like that. So bizarre, kind of these one note things to do. But hey, I think it sold me on why I liked it so much.
And I don't think he dies at the end, because he like morphs into the next world, whatever world that was.
That's where I'm like, I don't know if we can jump the shark in a movie that like got rid of subtitles the first 5 minutes, but that jumped the shark. Like, this was a ridiculous moment in this already ridiculous movie.
The only critique I have for this film is that it should have ended, like, there was a big, huge climax, and then, like, then it got drawn out towards the end, and then it was like, oh, it's over. It just, like, stopped randomly. Like, I thought there was going to be, like, another big battle or something like that where he was going to take out the animal people, but no, it just kind of like, it gets to the point where it's like, okay, here's your big battle. And then it's like, it meanders for like 20 minutes. Like this movie, because it's so crazy, needed to end on a super high note with him just destroying everything. And it didn't.
Yeah. For as frantic as it was, it didn't have the ending that matched how crazy and frantic it was at the beginning. And yeah, I definitely say that the editing of this, it was meant to be kind of maddening and crazy, but it didn't really work in some elements. So yeah, that's probably one of my only few like bad things to say, because I really think it's so fun and it's supposed to be kind of cheesy and bad. But that was like things that I'm like, ah, you could have made it a bit better with these little notes.
Yes. And this leads to our new segment. You were eaten by a tiger last week, so you don't know about this segment. We have moved to Blog Talk Radio, and since we are part of their network, it is now time for commercial roulette. You will either hear two commercials, one commercial, or no commercials right now. What commercial did you hear, guys? Did you hear that Granger commercial that I always hear? Since you're across the world, you're going to get some random stuff. I want to know what that random commercial is. So leave a comment or send me a tweet or feed EJ to the Tigers. Is that an option? Now it's time for our main topic of the show. Top five non-Marvel or DC films. Heavy, heavy stuff.
It's a crazy big, big topic again. Like I talked about with our magic debate, something that like big blanket topic, we find out it's a way deeper subject. And I'm going to kick it off with my honorable mentions. My first one is Tank Girl. I think a lot of people I don't know if a lot of people even remember this, but this was another one that like as soon as the movie starts, it's instant cult classic status. Like, you know, this isn't going to be a beloved movie by other than a few people in a niche market. Man, Lori Petty as Tank Girl, great stuff. I really like the environmental message and like this whole like post-apocalyptic world they're in. Great stuff. I really actually wanted to get into the source material a bit more too, because I really don't know about it. So I know from the movie and I love the movie, but I really want to get into that comic book.
And then you also have Spawn as your second.
And Spawn was a hard one because I'm like, he's basically a superhero. And that's when we started kind of getting looser with the term of like, you know, non-Marvel, non-DC, because to me, Spawn is a superhero. What he does is very superhero. Like, he has a cool cape, you know, that, you know, he's an awesome character. But man, that 90s Spawn movie is perfect. Like Michael J. White as Spawn, John Leguizamo as Clown, like so many great casting choices, so good. It's a product of its time. And it kind of reminds me of something on your list as well, of like these weird action-y kind of surreal movies. And yeah, it's interesting. Love Spawn so, so much.
I remember that film coming out and it being so hyped for it. And then it just kind of fell flat. It kind of falls flat a little bit if you're a fan of the comic book or just it's a weird movie. It's not as weird as Officer Down, but like again, it's missing something to make it like an awesome film. And I hope Todd McFarlane makes another one, because I love the concept of the character.
Yeah, it's a great concept. So much you can do with it. You know, even the animated stuff was good, but I really have a special place in my heart for the movie. It makes me think of the old 90s Mortal Kombat movie. Like, so bad, but still so kind of fun.
Yes, John Leguizamo is amazing in it. My honorable mentions, I wanted to just stick in the 80s or in the 90s because I love the Judge Dredd film with Stallone and Rob Schneider. I know it's kind of kitschy and kind of takes your shit all over the comic book, but I love that post-apocalyptic world. I love the robots that I created in there, and I love that whole part where Schneider and Stallone are doing I am the law, you know, like it has so many good moments for me in it, but not a lot of people liked it.
I only have minor complaints with it. You know, it's definitely a product of its time. And I think since Demolition Man's so kind of close to it, I always just kind of like, I'm going to watch that instead of watching like another like 90s Stallone movie. And this, I think that's my only problem with it, is like there's so much at that time kind of like it, where when we get to my list, there's a newer Dredd that kind of surprised me of when it came out and how it was.
And my other honorable mention, staying in the 90s, only a year away from Dread, is The Mask with Jim Carrey. I just remember at the time this taking over, like, conversation. And Jim Carrey just being this force. And I don't know how faithful it is to the comic book, but it was definitely really entertaining. It introduced swing music. I'm sure swing music was coming around, but I felt like everybody was doing swing music after The Mask, or swingers, or like, it was that movement that was going on, and it was part of a movement. And I think Jim Carrey was perfectly cast for the character. And then the animation was awesome, and early Cameron Diaz.
I really think The Mask is one of these movies that is a perfect, like, comic book turn to life. Like, it's so out there and so fun, but it's still grounded in some kind of realism. And it really, I think, I don't want to say launched Jim Carrey, but this was another thing that, like, pushed him further into the zeitgeist and made him that household name. And I think The Mask is a great choice.
All right, let's get to our top five list. Your number five is...
My number five is Scott Pilgrim versus the World, directed by the fabulous Edgar Wright. I know this is going to be my most eye roll one, because this is kind of like a polarizing film. But man, I just think this is one that, kind of like I said with The Mask, is this is a perfect comic book brought to life. This feels like you're watching like a video game or a comic book brought to life. It's so bright, so fun, so action filled. I really enjoy it. Is it a little hipster dip, like douchebag millennial? A little bit, but I think that's kind of the charm of it.
A little bit? It's a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, a lot of it. Like, once you cast Aubrey Plaza and Michael Cera in a movie, it's like, oh, we're getting these kind of, you know, it became that kind of thing, especially with the casting. But I do think, like, the casting choices were pretty great for it. You know, there's a couple people I didn't really like Chris Evans was a really random character in that movie, but...
I have Chris Evans on my list too in a non-superhero role. Chris Evans, for the longest time, was just trying to break into the right role, and because he did a lot of different superhero films, Fantastic Four, Scott Pilgrim. I have The Losers on my list. There's the offshoot one where it's not X-Men, but it's kind of like X-Men where he's in it, and it's set in Japan. I'm blanking on that film, but I'm one of the only people who like that film.
Yeah, it definitely took him a while to find it. And then once he got it, you know, he knew he was going to be a comic book actor. He's like, I'm meant to be in the genre, but who am I supposed to be? He definitely found his choice. But yeah, he was one of the really off choices for me in Scott Pilgrim. I know you don't really particularly like this movie, but I really do feel like it is a great comic book brought to life.
I think in hindsight, watching this film drunk with a bunch of friends would be fun.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
My number five... I'm going with David Cronenberg's A History of Violence. I just rewatched this trailer, and all these films that I'm going to talk about right now, my top five, I rewatched all the trailers. I've seen them several times, but I really want to see them right now again. And that's for me is what makes a good film, is when you just want to watch it over and over again, or you get goosebumps when you see certain scenes here and there. And this is Viggo Mortensen, Maria Bello, Ed Harris, William Hurt. Like, this is an all-star cast for a great concept of a film. And then you put David Cronenberg putting it together. And this is my number five. It could easily be my number one, but the list I have is so awesome. So it's at five. It's at five. And go see it again. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, this was going to make it on my list. I was going to I figured you were going to put it on it because it is that awesome. And it's going to probably be on everyone's list. And Cronenberg's a favorite of mine. And to see him do something like this, so awesome. I'm really glad you picked it as number five.
And I'm watching. Viggo Mortensen is the only person that's not doing anything lately. But Maria Bello, she's doing that Goliath TV show that's on Amazon right now with Billy Bob Thornton. And she's always been a phenomenal actress. Ed Harris is in Westworld. And that just got episode 9, and that he's batshit crazy in that. And then William Hurt, going back to Goliath, he plays one of the creepiest villains I've ever seen ever in a series. Like, he is, and I think he's hitting like a whole new level in acting, and this is part of it too. Because I've worked at a video store, so I've seen some of his first films and seen him grow as an actor, even though he's like 105 now. But like, William Hurt is an underrated actor. That's awesome. Let me know where you rank History of Violence on the non-superhero film list.
All right, so my number four pick is a really out there choice, something I don't think anyone would really put on their list, but I had to put it on mine because I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. It's the haunted world. It's the haunted world of El Super Bisto. It's a mouthful of a title, but it's by Rob Zombie.
Okay, number one, you have to give that. You have to really sell this title.
It is the haunted world of El Super Bisto. Like, it is.
You would not be a soccer announcer.
No, man.
It's the haunted world of the El Super Bisto.
Yeah, I'm not that kind of Spanish guy. Like, I'm the other kind of Spanish. I'm just the more chill kind. But no, yeah, man, this is so out there. And I actually forgot this was a comic book before it was the animated movie that Rob Zombie made. And this was kind of his break in between, like, Halloween and stuff. And he was like, eh, no one's really liking me. I'm going to do something so niche and so out there. And the character El Super Bisto is this, like, luchador, porn star, douchebag. And he's so suave, but, like, gets kind of into, like, crime investigation. It's just completely nuts, really out there. Paul Giamatti plays Dr. Satan. And there's a lot of elements from other Rob Zombie movies. Like, Dr. Satan was a character in House of a Thousand Corpses. You know, there's Michael Myers makes a cameo. This is just, it reminds me of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where it's like a group of all of these like horror references kind of shoved into this world that he made. And, you know, there's Nazi zombies looking for gold. Like, it's just completely crazy. And Rob Zombie still found a way to put his wife in the movie, because of course that's what Rob Zombie does.
That's what you have to do. You have to keep your wife happy. I mean, isn't what Tim Burton does too?
Well, yeah, but they ended up getting split up and then still being in movies together. I'm like, well, even a divorce couldn't help you guys. But yeah, that's definitely what Rob Zombie does. And I definitely think his wife fits into his, like, his world. Like, her voice is crazy. If she was a couple years younger, she would have been my choice for Harley Quinn, because she is nuts and plays that, like, trailer trash clown girl very well. And I think she would have been my dream casting for Harley Quinn. But she plays a great, like, kind of feminine superhero in this, very Black Widow. Definitely like her in this movie. The Haunted World of El Super Bisto. Something maybe people should go check out randomly. I see it on Hulu all the time, so definitely watch it.
I've never heard of this before, so I'm definitely going to check it out. It's going to be one of those late nights where my wife's going to be like, what are you watching? I'm like, eh, just go back to bed. Just go back to bed. I'm going to watch El Super Bisto. I mean, the name is the best. I think it's awesome. My number four is got to be one of the most... I feel like all these films are underrated. I don't think any of these did amazing at the box office of any of our lists, and so I think modern America needs to fucking wise up and watch some of these films. But The Rocketeer from 1991, if this film came out now, it would make buku bucks, because it's where we are right now in the world of cinema. It's pre-MCU, MCU. It's everything that Disney and Marvel are doing right now, but it's better. Because it's like Indiana Jones and Nazis. I love that time period that you have. And then I don't even know what Billy Campbell's doing now, or has he done anything since then? But he played Cliff, who ends up becoming the Rocketeer. But it's got Jennifer Connelly, Alan Arkin, Timothy Dalton, like Paul Sorvino. Like, it's you got mobsters, you got Terry O'Quinn from Lost. So you got mobsters, Nazis, and then you got a random dude who gets a rocket and he's got to save his girl.
I like how one, our Terry O'Quinn references are different. You said Lost. I was going to be like, oh, the Stepfather movie that came out way back when. That's funny. Our Terry O'Quinn references are different. But no, I think The Rocketeer is everything that like Marvel's been trying to do. I think everything Tomorrowland tried to do. It's so ahead of its time. Like, I agree with you. If it was released this weekend, it would have been a box office smash and definitely way ahead of its time. And I'm glad that it, like you kind of said, we're giving shout outs to movies that really deserve the appreciation, because these are badass movies that really didn't do too well. And The Rocketeer is definitely one of them.
And Joe Johnston, this guy just knows how to make films. And so it's hilarious, because I was like, oh, it reminds me of Indiana Jones. And he did the first episode of Young Indiana Jones, the TV show. But he directed Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which was just changed the game for Disney kids movies. I remember going to see that. And then he did Jumanji, October Sky. October Sky is one of my favorite, like, warm-hearted films in there. That's Jake Gyllenhaal, where he's a coal miner, but he's a rocket. He wants to be a physicist. And it just brings tears to the eyes. And then Joe Johnston did Jurassic Park 3, Hidalgo. Hidalgo is like my ultimate like animal warm your heart film. And then
thank you for skipping over Jurassic Park 3, by the way. Oh. I always just think of when that raptor spoke to him in the plane, that dream sequence. And that's the always thing I always think of. And I'm like, well, now it makes sense. You reading off his filmography. And I'm like, well, now I know why there's a talking raptor in Jurassic Park 3. You did Jumanji. Like, it all makes sense now.
He also did The Wolfman, but he also did Captain America First Avenger. He's up there, man. He does. I don't know what you would categorize those films, but they kind of all fit in the same genre. Like, Hidalgo is an epic film, and the horse kind of talks. They do some crazy things in there. But then, like, Jumanji is another crazy film, but it's, I want to say it's all in the same genre, just slightly off center from each other.
Yeah, he makes like really aggressive family films. And yeah, I think it's interesting.
Aggressive,
like,
family films. That's his job. Joe Johnson, aggressive family films.
Because, yeah, like The Rocketeer, like everything you've named, I'm like, these are great family movies, but they're really deep, hard subjects. Like, these are not your normal family movies. It's like, yeah, so aggressive family films. We just made a new genre today.
Oh, man, that's I like good laughs on Monday. Monday laughs are good. All right, sir, we're at number three. Number three.
Number three for me is, you know, to kind of connect back to one of your things on your list. To me, my number three is Dread, the remake of Dread, or maybe a sequel or kind of a reboot, whatever it was awesome. I think Dread was really cool. I think the format of the film was great. It came right after Indonesia. I think it was Indonesia's The Raid. So I was really into these like concepts of like police doing like hotel like movies where like you kind of have to go through each layer of the apartment complex or the building. Really, really cool. Lena Headey as the villain was awesome. Her like mama role was cool. The drug they used called slow-mo that did these really beautiful slow-mo scenes. That was one of the first movies I really wanted to go out and see in 3D because I knew it was going to be beautiful and visual. And it was definitely really, 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 really cool. I know kind of people really weren't in love with it, but there's been a lot of fan love for a sequel. So it's definitely not glossed over, but it didn't get the appreciation I think it deserved. Because Carl Urban as Dreadman, perfect as well.
Carl Urban, I think that our whole list is underrated actors or underrated films or underrated directors because, like, Carl Urban as Dredd is perfect. It's, like, perfect casting.
Yeah. Like, you see half of his face the whole movie, but he fully emote, like, his characterization was great. I think he is a great actor who doesn't really get the appreciation he does deserve. But then you see things like Dredd and everyone's like, oh, man, he was awesome. And I'm like, yeah, Carl Urban, watch him more. Like, he's super cool.
I enjoyed the film. I needed more. I needed more from it. I think it had like a muted palette to it to where it just kind of like, it kind of lulled me to sleep.
I will say it is definitely not the typical American action film. And I think that's kind of what attracted me to it because it was more stripped back and a little bit more chill than what came out around it. Like I was saying with your, like Judge Dredd, there's a lot of it like that at this time. You know, there's a lot of post-apocalyptic, there's that, Total Recall. There's a lot that kind of reminded me of what Judge Dredd was then, where this one is kind of in the middle of a bunch of action movies. And it was like, we're going to do something a little different. So that's why I definitely have an appreciation for it. And I think a big thing on my list is I want it to be a great adaptation of comic book to like screen. Be vibrant, be weird, be out there. And Dredd was definitely that.
My number three pick is The Losers. It doesn't get more underrated or unappreciated than The Losers because this film is phenomenal and just bombed at the box office. And I have no clue why. Peter Berg worked on the screenplay. Interesting. But The Losers, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Zoe Saldana, Chris Evans, Idris Elba, Jason Patrick as the villain. Come on, people. And then Chris Evans, going back to the film, I couldn't remember. Push, that was the film.
Oh, Push. I know why you put that out of your mind. But yeah, no. Yeah, Chris Evans, Push. Jeez, I forgot about that.
But this film is amazing, and it's based on a comic book that's really good. I just don't understand why it just didn't hit with the cinema moviegoers out there. It's a little stylized, but like The sarcasm is really solid. The action is over the top. Like, it just, it has everything. It has a twist. It has so many good things in it, yet nobody went to go see it. And I'm angry at the world for that.
Well, I'm one of the people you're angry at, because I will say I have not seen it. I've always actually ended up hearing great things about it after, but I don't think it was properly marketed. I don't think they sold it to who they should have been selling it to. I think they kind of made it look like a more mainstream kind of welcoming, accepting movie. And I don't think it is that in the end. I think it's a more kind of weirder, little bit kind of off of like center film, and I don't think it was sold as that. So because I don't want to see it. I just saw Red, kind of, you know, all these like action movie people coming together. I was like, I don't really want to see this again. So I definitely don't think it was helped by its marketing. But that's something on my list, like you want to do with Hunter World of El Super Bisto. I'm gonna have to go watch The Losers now, because love Jeffrey Dean Morgan, love Zoe Saldana. Definitely have to check it out.
So now that makes me kind of think of like, because when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, so Red came out in 2010 as well. And then I want to check to see when the A-Team came out, because I feel like they're all in 2010, the A-Team came out.
See,
so you had three of the same
exact... with it.
That makes sense to why, like, people were like, oh, the A-Team sucks, and Red was kind of like blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I think people got confused or just didn't want to see it, because, yeah, you had three of the same exact kind of movies coming out at the same time.
Yeah, I as soon as you were talking about like people not wanting to see it, I'm like, why did I not end up seeing it? Like, I usually try to watch as something obscure or out there, and I'm like, why did I skip this? And it was definitely a cluttered market at the time of these kind of similar movies. And I think it just, the trailers didn't really sell probably what the movie was in reality. So definitely going to have to look at The Losers. I'm glad you put it on your list.
For me, I was at the time, I would have watched anything that Chris Evans does, because I really like him as an actor, and I like him when he's like is witty. Idris Elba, it's before I even like knew who Idris Elba was, because now he's just, I will see anything that he does. And then Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I like him as well. Like, it had a good bunch of alpha males in it, which I like. I like those guys.
Yeah, you need that in an action movie, but I don't think it also, in the opposite end, it didn't make the one female character in it super weak. And that's my thing. And it's like, have alpha male, but don't put down your one awesome female to do it. Something Marvel's done, I think, pretty well is like awesome dudes, really awesome chick. Same thing. I think The Losers looks like it has a bunch of awesome dudes, but an awesome girl as well.
No, I think Zoe like gets at least like five or six nut shots in during this film. Like I think this was right after Star Trek, because she was in Star Trek, and then.
So she was starting to ride that big wave of like kind of getting just that little bit of a name.
Right, and then the film fails, so you're like, damn it. And then she's like, oh, I'll just be in Guardians of the Galaxy and be the same exact character as Loser's Girl, but I'll just paint myself green.
I see, that's another thing, too, is like, I ended up feeling that she was going to be kind of like the same character, you know, in Guardians, so I was like, and at least I know what she looked like in The Losers. I definitely have to check it out. I'm kind of upset that I skipped it at first.
Oh, no, she was already out, because she did Avatar right after Star Trek, so she had already done everything possible box office wise. So, you know, when you have the highest grossing film ever, you're like, whatever.
Yeah, I'll just chill out for the rest of my career now.
Number two, going back to EJ.
I'm very excited about my number two choice. This was the definition of making your comic book reality, and it's Sin City. Beautiful film. Robert Rodriguez is one of my all-time favorite directors. Like, if someone, one of the like directors who gets me, it's Robert Rodriguez, you know, from his wrestling company he's made to films like this. He's awesome. Like, his adaptation of the world was really, I don't want to say probably not the most faithful, but I think it was pretty accurate. I think it's really, really well done. Really great cast. Bruce Willis in it, Mickey Rourke, Rosario Dawson. It just, even Clive Owens, oh God, Elijah Wood is the villain. Just crazy, crazy cast. Really nicely filmed, really good story. Definitely really wanted to put Sin City on the list.
Sin City is an amazing film, and I could easily put this in my list anywhere, the 1 through 5. But I knew it was on your list. I had it in my honorable mentions. With Sin City, I totally agree with you that this is the first time I watched the movie, and it was the comic book brought to life perfectly. Like, I think that Sin City should have gotten more recognition for what it did for cinema and how it changed cinema, because I feel like this film did something different than anybody else was doing up to that point in time.
And that's always what Robert Rodriguez has been about. You know, he's always been like, that's cool. That's what everyone else is doing. Not doing it this week. And he did it again with Sin City, and really, really appreciate it as just a film. I don't even care what the story was involved. Just the fact that he made it alone and how he made it, you get points for that. And I want to say, I think even Tarantino did segments within it. Like, this was just him kind of showing, like, that's what Robert Rodriguez does. He says, like, look what I can do. And I'm going to do it amazingly. And just, he's so bold and kind of cocky with his directing. And that's what he did with Sin City. He was like, oh, this unfilmable universe, I'm going to film it and make it perfect. I really do think, like you said, and like I said, this is the perfect example of comic book brought to life.
I always forget that Robert Rodriguez has done the Spy Kid movies.
Yeah, you know, it's funny if you think about it, how Spanish influenced they are. They're definitely Robert Rodriguez. But yeah, it's just like, I have to make money and my kids have to watch something.
And he made a tons of money with that. Because I was like looking through his career, I was like, okay, where? Because I feel like Sin City is the anomaly of his career, I think. Not a negative or a slight. It's just like, you look at his film career and what he's done, and then Sin City pops out, and you're like, oh my God, how did he pull that off? Like, where did the imagination come from?
And I, you know what's so funny? I think, I don't know who else could have handled Sin City, though. Seeing what he did, don't roll your eyes, but I think Zack Snyder would have probably loved Sin City. I think he probably would have done a decent job with it, because he's a visual director more than he is anything else, and that was a visual direction movie. But I think Robert Rodriguez gave it a soul, and I think that's why he was the perfect choice. He gets visuals, but he also understands backing everything up with some kind of flesh and soul and heart to it.
The only reason why I didn't have this film on my list is because it's so dark. Like, it's a dark film. The girl I was dating at the time, she got into a fight in the parking lot after the movie because, like, everybody was all angry after seeing this film. Like, it just, it was an insane feeling that you got from this movie. And I really, at the time, was like blown away, but I don't want to, I don't ever, for some reason, I don't want to go back and revisit it.
And it's so funny that this is like not even the darkest movie on my list, because my number one choice, like, I just got progressively crazier as my list has gone on. It's like, oh, Scott Pilgrim, fun. Oh, animated movie, Dread, Sin City. Oh boy. Yeah, I definitely agree. That is, I don't want to say a negative because I do like dark things, but man, Sin City is definitely not a, not a light viewing. It's not a good comic book movie that, like, oh, yay. And God, look how many poor attempts, like the spirit that came after it. A weak attempt at trying to make it. Sorry, Frank Miller. I know these are your things, but man, did I not like the spirit. And it just felt like Sin City got it right. And that's what happens when you don't do it right.
Yeah, no, it's because 300 came out afterwards. And yes. So that was the next where it kind of visualized film from there. But I don't think anybody was able to pull it off since then. The spirit came out. And I think Frank Miller was able to make the spirit because of Sin City and 300. Like, he wasn't, but then you leave him alone on his own accord, and he's just like, oh, I'm going to have my head get knocked off, and then I'm going to have my head used to beat somebody else up with. And I'm like, wait a second. We were talking about that with Officer Down. Like, who signed off on that? Like, who yeah. signed off on that part? Like, no, Frank, I don't really think that's the best part here. But we were, you know, it's funny because I was like, ah, Sin City is really dark. But then, like, my next two films are really dark, and my number two film is The Crow, which...
And that's dark.
It's dark, and for me, it's 18-year-old Matt Sardo going into a cinema, watching Brandon Lee's last film, an awesome action film, but like super dark, heavy matter. You know, rape and revenge, and just heroin and drugs, and just filmed in a super gritty way that hasn't been like nobody's been able to do it kind of again like that. And then the soundtrack is just. Fucking unbelievable that, you know, so that movie just lives with me in my car and my CD player forever because The Cure, STP, like it has a soundtrack that just lasts forever. And this film lasts forever for me.
Well, if grunge could be like a physical thing in a movie, like the music genre grunge, it would have been The Crow. Like, it's so 90s, like heroin chic, basically. Like, it's so perfect, so dark. Brandon Lee is so phenomenal. I think his career got cut obviously way too short. You know, the freak accident that happened on set for this film. I think everything about The Crow is super, super dark, but still, I don't think it takes away from how amazing. And I think the darkness actually adds to it. And, you know, this kind of makes Batman sometimes feel like a light movie. It didn't take until recently where we got super dark Batman, and The Crow's been doing it since 94. So it's really interesting, like, how I think impactful this was. Not crazy box office numbers, not widely loved by critic, but I do think it really impacted the genre a lot.
Wow, that makes – you kind of just brought up a subject matter right there, because, like, 1989 Batman hit, and then it kind of ventures off into this campy zone. And then 1994, you have The Crow, which is, like, super dark and gritty. So it makes the Batman movies look worse because of The Crow. Makes sense why I was so angry at Batman 3.
Yeah, because, you know, as much as those crazy Schumacher movies were, they're so 60s Batman. You know, they fit that. But then you're looking at what The Crow was doing at that time, and you're like, but you guys could be so much better. Like, and that's what it took you. It took so long. And there's so many characters that have so many Batman influences that did better. And, you know, I even think Blade is a good version of like a Batman-ish character that was brought to screen and adapted amazing. Someone who I would have put on my list if this wasn't Marvel DC-ist, because you know, he is a superhero, but he's more of a vampire. But no, I definitely think The Crow is such a great choice. Really glad you put it on. So I think I wouldn't have really put it on my list, but talking about it, I really love it more and more.
Again, I have to give a shout out to all the underrated people that were in this type of film. Michael Wincott as the villain. His career is just amazing of what he's doing right in general. Like, he always has a good schmarmy villain. Right now, he's in Westworld. He plays Old Bill, and he's just this broken down robot that kind of just talks to Anthony Hopkins' character. It's just a really tiny part in the series, but it's just awesome. Michael Wincott, again, all these films are super underrated. The Crow on my list probably has to be the highest grossing film. I don't know that off the top of my head, but like, it had the most hype because of Brandon Lee's death. And that also added to the mythos of the film when it came out. And it was an event to go see the film because he had just passed away. And that's why The Crow is number two for me.
So now we're to my number one choice. And I've been very excited to talk about this because this is a little bit of a obscure kind of pick for me. And I think all of mine have been out there, but this is probably one of the craziest ones. When I was researching the genre, I kept seeing this movie pop up. And I'm like, I don't think you're being placed correctly. I don't think you're being placed. And then I found out this is based on a manga series. And my choice is Old Boy from Korea, directed by Park Chan-wook. One of the craziest, most disgusting, most disturbed, most badass action movie, horror films, revenge films I've ever seen in my entire life. It blew my mind.
Old Boy, when I own a comic book store, was one of those films or manga series that people were like, hey, have you read this? And I was like, no, because somebody told me what it was about, and I'm going to stay as far away from this book and movie as possible. And they're like, no, man, it's amazing. You need to watch it. And I was like, no, man, I really like where I'm at in my life right now, and I don't want to go down a dark path. I don't want to be like EJ. And so I have never seen this film. I did watch the Spike Lee version when it came out, and because it was tamer than the first one, but it's, you know, still a really messed up film.
Yeah, not even that tamer. I will say, as much as I thought Spike Lee was a very odd choice, I don't hate Spike Lee as a director. I think he's pretty good. I think he was an odd choice, but I will respect him because I think he kept the original vision there and kind of even amplified it. I think his ending is a little bit grander and a little bit bigger. I think the Korean version is obviously the far superior one. But what he did, I was like, okay, not bad. And, you know, there's a lot of these films. Like, there was another one I was going to put on my list called Ichi the Killer that was from Japan. That's another manga series that kind of got adapted to an obscure, gross movie. And I love that. But no, Old Boy, I think, is one of my favorite movies of all time. So when I found it to be, like, based on a manga series, I was like, it has to be on my list. And possibly, you know, it ended up being number one because it is probably the best made movie on my list.
the subject matter is just so messed up.
Like, yeah, I've it's seen like so a lot of messed like, up. I've seen a lot of revenge movies or a lot of like family dramas, but like how like the systematic torture of this man, the crazy revenge plot, the layers of the plot. I think this is one of the best scripts I've ever seen for a movie ever. And to know it came from like a manga comic book series, credit to those writers, the original writers, for even coming up with this. Like, I think Park Chan-wook gets a lot of credit for like, well, you created a badass movie, but you know, there's a source material this comes from that I didn't even know existed. So major respect to them for creating a movie that I ended up falling in love with as much. And God, yeah, I can talk about Old Boy forever. Really glad I found out that I can find a way to put it on this list.
My number one film takes us back to 2007. A little Josh Hartnett and Danny Hudson. Was he in this season of American Horror Story?
No, he was only really in like 1.5 seasons of it. But yeah, he definitely, as a, you know, we talked about a lot. He's a crazy underrated actor. One of my all-time favorites. Love him. And him as the villain in this is just sick, man. Great acting there.
And this also has an early Ben Foster, which now he's probably going to get nominated for an Academy Award for Hell or High Water as like best supporting actor. In the
I can't believe those are words you just said. I never thought Ben Foster would finally get here, especially after what he did with Warcraft this year. Good job that he got to like make up for that tenfold.
The movie I'm talking about is 30 Days of Night, based on the comic book series. And you have 30 days of night in Alaska, and guess what? Vampires are here to eat you all, and you're fucked. Like, it's just straight up fucked. And then the visualization that they did, it's filmmaking at a new level. They took vampires and they took the vampire genre to a new level. For me, there's a scene in it where it's an overhead shot where they show the vampires attacking the town and everybody's really tiny, but you see the blood and the white and the snow, and it's a beautiful moment of filmmaking in there of things that I've never seen before. And that's why I put this as my number one film, because one, I really enjoyed it because I just love the concept alone. Then the filmmaking takes the genre to a whole new level, and then it's just insane. It's insane.
I really love 30 Days of Night, and this came out the same year another great vampire set snow movie. It's a Swedish film called Let the Right One In that was remade later on called Let Me In. Great movie there, where it's like, if it's vampire mythos and it's snowy, and you know, that's so more of a drama, where I really think what 30 Days of Night did for action and kind of these more like, kind of like you said, the fight scenes and the brutality, a whole nother level. The color palette's gorgeous. The acting's gorgeous. I can't believe like a Josh Hartnett movie made it to number one on anyone's list. Good job for Josh Hartnett. But yeah, I definitely really enjoy this one. And I'm really just proud as a podcaster with you that you finally put a horror movie number one on your list for something.
Oh, shut your face.
I've waited so long for this moment. Now I'm very happy. You've been kind of getting into more weirder stuff now. We're talking into darker, dirtier stuff, and very proud. Very proud.
But this is what bothers me about this. This film cost $32 million to make, and it only grossed $39 million. Like, what were you doing in November, American people? Like, did you not want to see a horror film? Like, did you not want to see Josh Hartnett? I mean, like, he's an attractive guy. Ladies, why didn't you want to go see him rescue the world from this evil vampire world? Like, why? Why?
This is a common theme we've talked about with all of our choices. It's like, why did you not just become this epic masterpiece? And, like, I definitely think it was there, and it's – I'm glad it gained like a cult classic status, and I'm glad you got to appreciate it, because it definitely needs to be talked about and definitely went way under the radar. And I can't believe it made that little of money and on something that like that probably year something way worse got way more money than them.
And I went to the theater to watch this film. I love going to the cinema, and I just don't understand it. Like, it's a film that needs to be in the cinema to appreciate it. And the number one film at the box office in 2007 was Spider-Man 3, followed by Shrek 3rd, and then Transformers, and then Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. And then there was a little Harry Potter movie and then I Am Legend, Bourne Ultimatum, National Treasure, Book of Secrets, and then Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, so that's definitely why. It's one of those years that, like, horror films can't get appreciated because the mainstream, like, Hollywood films are just crazy box office eaters. Even if, like, God, look how hated Spider-Man 3 is now, but it was the number one movie that year. Look, that's so mind-blowing that, like, 30 Days of Night is a pretty critically liked movie, but it didn't do that well, where Spider-Man 3 is so trashed and did well. You know, just it kind of pissed. This is what pisses me off. And now to see it and
Do you want to get more angry?
Oh, God, what's up?
At number 18, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer made $131 million. And then at, where'd you go? Number 27, Ghost Rider, Nicolas Cage, made $115 million.
Like, and that's so funny because these are just, you know, we're talking about comic book movies, and those are two comic book movies that aren't good at all. You know, I really liked what the Silver Surfer looked like and I thought he was kind of cool, but the movie around him was shit and killed Galactus. All of that was shit. And then you get back to 30 Days of Night. That's not bad at all and made nothing. Just really, really does suck.
Yeah, even where'd it go? Resident Evil made 50 million. Resident Evil Extinction. So that was probably Resident Evil, like, four or five, I don't really know how many, I think maybe three, made 50 million. Like, it couldn't even, like, oh, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon made 54 million. Like, I understand why Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles made that much money. Because, like, oh my God, Bridge of Terabithia, why is it on my list? Why is that? Why did I have to see that? 82 million. But, like, that movie looked like it was supposed to be, like, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Guess what? The girl just dies in the river. Like, it's not a fucking... Fuck you, Bridge of Terabithia.
Wow, spoiler to the 8-year-olds who listen to our podcast who are about to read it in class. Like, guess that one was ruined for you. But God, you damn, you reminded me of that movie. You're making me angry. We're supposed to leave this off on a good note. Let's talk about how great 30 Days of Night is again.
No, what we should do is we should make sure that these films don't fail again. Whatever those future films are out there. I don't know which ones those are that are coming up, but we need to support them. And then you need to drag your friends to go see them and enjoy them, because I want to see more films like A History of Violence, like The Losers, like 30 Days of Night. But if we don't go see them, we're not going to get them. And I think we're going to miss out if it's like, oh, it's a Netflix exclusive. Like, if it just goes directly to on demand, you're going to miss that experience because we just had it with Officer Down. If we do a callback.
And I was just about to say I even want more movies like Officer Down that I want to see do well and actually get made. And, you know, we do need to support this. That's why I was so happy to write a positive review, because I typed in Officer Down and there's all these, like, variety of, like, it's too over the top, too much. And I'm like, yeah, that's the point. Like, these movies also need to be sold and marketed to the right people and made sure the right critics are also shown as well, so they can get the voice that needs to be sold. And all these movies could have done very, very well if just the zeitgeist and how pop culture was working just shifted a little bit.
I do like the fact that we're ending angry, because this is going to keep me motivated. And I think that's the point of, from since the election to now to 2017, is I need to be angry and motivated because we need to change some shit. And what we're going to do is we're going to make the fucking art world recognize that this is good shit and they need to support it. Fuck you.
Yeah, we need to make art great again. Like, fuck America being great again. Like, let's make art great first and then we'll do everything else.
Hi, EJ. We are the countdown, the Rogue One. What are you, 2 weeks away?
You're counting down more than I am.
No, this is going to be like, okay, I know that we're just talking about underrated films that needed to be supported, and then I transitioned into big box office, like, Disney, Lucasfilm craziness. But I don't think the world is prepared for how many people are going to die at the hands of Lord Vader in 2 weeks.
I don't think you're ready for the movie to... I don't think it's going to be exactly that. I don't think they're going to get away with as dark as a movie as that they're trying to sell us on. I don't know. I'm very interested in the countdown to this, because I'm not crazy, like, against this movie, but I don't know if it's going to be what everyone's expecting it to be, this darker, more, like, grittier take on the Star Wars franchise. I still think they're going to Star Wars it up.
This film is based off of one sentence that said, a lot of rebels died getting the plans to this. And if everyone dies, it's going to be that film. Like, it's, I'm saying this is going to be the Dark Knight of the Star Wars films because everyone's going to die. That little girl, Jane Erso, like, I'm not even remembering her name because guess what? She's going to die. Like, everybody, Forrest Whitaker, dead. All the the blind Jedi guy, dead. Like, it's, they're all, the robot guy, he's going to get memory wiped. Like, it's, they're all dead. The guy from E to Mama to Ben, to Bien, he's dead too. Like, he's dead too. All dead.
I also am mad that you called him blind Jedi guy, and his name is Donnie Yen, and he's a awesome actor, and probably one of my things I'm looking forward to. But yeah, whatever. We'll just gloss over him. But yeah, I'm very intrigued by this because the reaction it's getting is very fun. And, you know, counting down to the weeks four, and then we're getting close to our top lists of the year. Can't wait to do that as well.
Hi, EJ. Have a good weekend. Are you not going to say have a good weekend back?
Okay, cool. I will say you have a great weekend. And I do mean that you have a great weekend, not just because you're telling me to say it.
Hey, Matt, we survived another episode. Oh, no!
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram at monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter at Matthew Sardo. My co-host, EJ, is also on Twitter at EJChrist with a K. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio, our new home. All you have to do is click the follow button and support us. Thank you so much. If you have a chance, we'd greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. And all you Android users out there, listen to the show on Stitcher. Or the best way to listen to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast is to come to monkeysfightingrobots.com, listen to the podcast, and then comment in the comment section. And we can have a dialogue there because I want to become friends with you. EJ doesn't. Not at all. And he doesn't even want to chime in.
Not even a little bit. Like, I want to be acquaintances with you guys, but friends, eh. If this was MySpace, none of you are on my top eight.
You are so bougie, it's the best.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 102nd episode of Monkeys Fighting Robots a success. The train just keeps moving. We just keep moving. Shout out to my co-host, EJ Marino, for putting up with me. Jeff Shade is the creator of our amazing intros and outros. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkeys Fighting Robots logo. Are you a monkey or are you a robot? The staff at Visual Realm built our website and keeps us up and running. To all my friends, family, and the interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo, and this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.